Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. Content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, In the Summertime, is brought to us by Mungo Jerry. We'll be hearing more about and from summer rock later on in today's program. But first, these trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Plunges into Music 2007. Question number one. In 1965, the best-selling record of the year was Satisfaction. The Beatles recorded Help. Motown was tearing up the charts, so guess who won Grammy that year for Best Vocal Group? Was it A, the Beatles? B, the Rolling Stones? C, the Supremes? D, the Anita Kerr Quartet? Or E, Steve Brummett and his Polka Pals? Hint, this group has performed successfully throughout Europe, London, and Nashville to L.A. Who is that group that got Best Vocal Group of the Year Grammy? Question number two. In 1996, John Popper, harmonica player for Blues Traveler, pulled off a Grammy first when he jumped out of his seat to get the award and A, tripped and fell. B, his pants fell down. C, he tore a ligament in his leg. Or D, he belched loudly. Which of those things happened when John Popper, from the Blues Traveler, jumped up to get his award on Grammy night in 1996? Answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. The transition section for today's program is brought to us by the series Today in Music History in www.musicorb.com and also from bgorecords.com. And today is the weekend of June the 17th. If you were born on June the 17th, you share a birthday with Igor Stravinsky, Rite of Spring composer, 1882 he was born. June the 17th, and Red Foley, the country singer, 1910 on June the 17th, James Brown, also born on June the 17th, and Barry Manilow, June the 17th, 1946. Or if you were born on June the 18th, you share a B-Day with Kay Kaiser, Rocky Mount, North Carolina orchestra leader from 1906. Paul McCartney of the Beatles, he was born on June the 18th, 1942. As was Tom Bailey, he was born on June the 18th, 1957. He's from the Thompson Twins. Deaths in music history this weekend include Johann Wagenaar, composer, Cyrano de Bergerac. June the 17th, 1941, he died. And Kate Smith, God Bless America, she died in Raleigh, North Carolina, on June the 17th, 1986. Important events in music history this weekend includes 1957 So Rare by Jimmy Dorsey Orchestra, peaks at number two. And in 1965, the Byrds debut on the charts with Mr. Tambourine Man. Back in 67, 2 years after that, Somebody to Love by Jefferson Airplane peaks at number five. And that same year, the Monterey International Pop Festival rocks Southern California this weekend. And back in 1977, James Taylor hits the charts with an update of Jimmy Jones's 1960 number one hit, Handyman. And finally, back in 1978, Cheeseburger in Paradise by Jimmy Buffett peaks at number 32. Carnivorous habits, made it nearly 7 or 8, losing weight without speed eating sunflower seeds, drinking lots of carrot juice and soaking up rays. But if not, I'd have these wonderful dreams, some kind of sensuous treat, not zucchini fettuccine, bulgur wheat, but a big warm bun and a huge hunk of meat. In local rock news, we see this article by Colin Campbell from News and Observer, published on May 29, 2011, entitled Bluegrass Musician from Four Oaks Takes Solo Flight. At first glance, Russell Johnson's recording studio appears modest. Two small bedrooms in his Four Oaks home hold bluegrass posters, a worn green and red couch, and a friendly cat. But in that small space is some of the most state-of-the-art recording and mixing gear available. The setup keeps Johnson's costs down in an industry where it's increasingly hard to earn a living, and he's been able to record hit songs without leaving the comfort of home. We have such a relaxed atmosphere here that the performances are good for the musicians, Johnson said. Johnson's fellow musicians can come and go, swinging by to lay down an instrumental track for the singer, who plays mandolin. That flexibility has allowed Johnson to put together a solo CD with help from big names like Nicky Sanders of the Steep Canyon Rangers. Johnson is best known for his work with the Grass Cats, who's A Good Way to Get the Blues hit number one on the bluegrass charts last year. Johnson's first solo CD is more than a decade. Anytime, Anyplace, But Only You was released this month. It features Johnson's original songs as well as bluegrass covers of Dean Martin, Maroon 5, and even reggae rapper Shaggy. I was able to do exactly what I wanted as far as making the record I always wanted to make, Johnson said. He brought in a variety of musicians from Grass Cats members to folks from his 1990s group, New Vintage. Two of his music students from Four Oaks, Emily Kirsch and Bailey Coe, are featured on a song, and his wife, Candace, pitches in too. Anytime, Anyplace has been in the works for years. Johnson has been recording the song since 2008 amid his other projects, and some songs have been in the works for longer. The title track, a long song, dates back furthest. It's one I worked on for 20 years and never really finished, he said. Johnson is a graduate of South Johnson High and UNC Chapel Hill, where he first picked up the mandolin. He's made music his profession for the past 7 years, recording and marketing his efforts, and booking his own shows. Anytime, Anyplace, But Only You is available on iTunes and on Johnson's website, bluegrasstunes.com. This next article comes to us from the book Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, Plunges into Music, 2007, entitled, Has Anyone Seen My Stradivarius? Everybody knows a Stradivarius is the world's most valuable type of violin, so how could anyone lose one? Here are a few amazing stories of violins that got away. Master violin maker Antonio Stradivari created more than 1,100 instruments during his lifetime. The several hundred that survive today are so valuable and so well documented, you'd think nobody would try to steal one because it would be immediately identified as stolen property. Considering their worth, you'd also think their owners would take good care of them. Guess again. Missing, the Davidoff Stradivarius, made in 1727, estimated value $3.5 million. Background, the Davidoff Stradivarius vanished from the Manhattan apartment of its owner, 91-year-old Erica Morini, considered one of the greatest violinists of all times, as she lay dying in a hospital a few blocks away. For years, the former child prodigy had kept the violin locked away in a closet rather than in a safe because she wanted it to be within close reach. While Morini was hospitalized, someone entered her apartment, unlocked the closet, and stole the violin, leaving an inferior violin in its place. It was insured for only $800,000. The theft was discovered when Morini's granddaughter, Erica Bradford, and her daughter, Valerie Bradford, let themselves into the apartment to prepare it for Morini's return. Morini made it back home and lived out her last few days in the apartment, but the violin never did. Friends substituted a fake so that when she asked to see if the violin was safe, they could point to it and assure her that it was. The outcome: the Davidoff Stradivarius is still missing. Reward, $100,000. According to news reports, Valerie Bradford kept failing lie detector tests and doesn't quite know why. The question she keeps failing: do you know who took the violin? I guess I get nervous, she says. Here's case number two. The Duke of Alcantara Stradivarius, made in 1732, estimated value in 1994, $800,000. Background: the Duke of Alcantara was owned by the University of California. On August the 2nd, 1967, David Margetz, a second violinist with the UCLA String Quartet, borrowed the violin from the university collection for a rehearsal in Hollywood. On his way home, he brought some groceries and then stopped at a restaurant. When he got back to his car, which was unlocked, he realized the violin was gone. To this day, Margetz can't remember if he put the violin in the car after rehearsal, which would mean that somebody stole it, or if he simply left it on the roof of his car and drove off. In January 1994, a violin dealer recognized the violin he was working on as an authentic Stradivarius. He looked it up in a reference book, found a photograph of the same violin, and discovered that it had been missing from UCLA for 27 years. It turned out the violin's owner was an amateur violinist named Teresa Salfato, who had gotten it from her ex-husband as part of their divorce settlement. He had gotten it from his aunt, who claimed to have found it beside a freeway in 1967. That sort of matches the violin left on the top of the car version, says Carla Shapiro, an attorney for UCLA. The outcome: at first, Salvato refused to give the violin back, but she eventually agreed to relinquish all claims of ownership in exchange for $11,500. She claimed she only wanted to do the right thing for the instrument. UCLA lost it once. They're really not very careful, she explains. So what do you know about today's featured genre? Summer rock and roll. Well, this series of articles comes to us from Behind the Hits, a book by Bob Shannon and John Javna, published in 1986. This first one is about Summer in the City by the Lovin' Spoonful. In 1966, there was an amusing rumor emanating from Lawrenceville Academy, a New Jersey prep school. People said that a student named Mark Sebastian, John's 15-year-old brother, had once submitted the poem that became Summer in the City to his English teacher at Lawrenceville and got an F for it. It might well have been true. John Sebastian didn't particularly like the poem when he first saw it either, but he did like the chorus, the part that went, "But at night there's a different world." Mark gave it to John and asked if he could do anything with it. John said he'd see. Sebastian put Mark's poem aside for a few months, and in the interim he came up with a little piano figure that he liked, but he didn't have a song for. Then one night as John was going to sleep, Mark's chorus, his own piano riff, and a set of new lyrics popped into his head. Bassist Steve Boone contributed a middle section, Sebastian said, and the song was done. His first impression of the song: certain notes sounded like car horns. I said, gee, this sounds sort of like Gershwin, sort of like an American in Paris. Maybe we could put traffic on it.
Hot town, summer in the city. Back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match. Yeah. But at night, it's a different world.
go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night.
The band went into New York's Columbia Studios for two nights. On the first, they did the entire instrumental track. It took four steps. They first had to have drums, organ, electric piano, and rhythm guitar. The second, a bass and auto harp. The third, a guitar. The final take added more percussion, including a big wastebasket that Zell kept hitting with a drumstick. Sebastian was too exhausted to even do a rough vocal that night, so everyone went home in suspense. The second night was for the vocals and sound effects. I remember this hilarious old Jewish sound guy who'd never had a job with a rock and roll band before, Sebastian says, looking at us quite puzzled as we auditioned mnemonic hammers to try to find the one that had the right intestinal tone to it. For car sounds, the old man brought in tapes of traffic jams and horns that he'd used when he worked in radio. The band listened to them for hours, then chose their favorites. John wanted the automobiles to start off softly, so the sound effects man threw in a Volkswagen horn at the beginning. The song was released in the summer, of course, and within a few weeks was number one in America. It was the Spoonful's only number one hit in their phenomenal string of seven consecutive top ten records between September 1965 and December 1966. Also from that same book, Behind the Hits, by Bob Shannon and John Javna, 1986, we see this article about Groovin' the Rascals. Writing on the vocal power of Felix Cavalier and Eddie Brigati, the Young Rascals' first number one hit, Good Lovin', was a stunning example of white rhythm and blues, but it was also a cover version of a song originally recorded by the Olympics. In 1967, the Beatles and Beach Boys were demonstrating to the world that rock and roll musicians could be creative without losing their audience or integrity. Cavalier, Brigati, Gene Cornish, and Dino Danelli were ready to try something original, too. They had minor hits with I've Been Lonely Too Long and You Better Run, but to get to the number one spot again, they needed an unusual song and a little help from a passing DJ. Felix Cavalieri tells what happened. I happened to be seeing a young lady at the time whom I thought I was going to marry, and Sunday afternoon was the only time that we could get together because Friday and Saturday nights are working nights for musicians. That's how the Groovin' on a Sunday Afternoon title and lyric came into being. Of course, Eddie wrote the lyrics. I just came up with the title and thought of each song and the music. At that point, in 1967, we felt a desire to experiment, and thanks to the Beatles, we were able to. They would do something on an album that would be unprecedented. It would sell so many records and become so popular that, okay, now the rest of us can try it, or try something a little bit like it. Before that, I think everybody was in the position where they are today, making these clone records, one after another, copying everybody else. The Beatles, being the innovators that they were, just opened up all these new worlds for us. For Cavalieri, the new worlds meant he could delve into the origins of the R&B music he'd been playing all of his life and incorporate some of the elements he found into the Rascals' sound. I discovered that most of the rhythms that our soul rock and certainly R&B rock is based on come from Afro-Cuban rhythms, so I was able to put a conga into that song, and it felt very nice. I mean, to me, it felt very nice, but to the record company, Atlantic Records, it did not feel nice at all. Atlantic's reaction to his use of congas on Groovin', Atlantic executive Jerry Wexler and company there, they were not too pleased with it, Groovin'. They didn't like it at all. They didn't want to put it out. They said, look, you're known as a rockin' band, known for this good-lovin' kind of white soul. What the heck are you going to do now? You going to become little sweethearts? It's funny, because that happened twice, and those were our two biggest records. Author's note, the other was People Gotta Be Free. We knew there was something special about Groovin', because the whole room was glowing when we recorded it. But on the other hand, you're in your early 20s, and the president of the record company says no to something, it makes an impression. Well, Felix, that's when you need to call Super DJ. nicest story I have about that song is the fact that New York DJ Murray the K, who happened to be near the studio at the time we were recording it, came into the room. Of course, we knew him from the old days. He came in and freaked out, just absolutely went bananas over the song, he says. That's a number one record. We had no idea or anything like that, but he actually went to Wexler and told him, if you don't put out this record, you're out of your mind. That seemed to turn the trick. Atlantic did release Groovin', and in May of 1967, the record reached number one. Thanks, Murray, wherever you are, for the record. Groovin' was based on a rhythm called Beyon, which is Latin dance rhythm. It's a very common conga. Of course, we had a fantastic bass player by the name of Chuck Rainey. He came in. He had been working with King Curtis's band, and we were one of the first bands that he ever worked for as a session bass player. Now he's the grandfather of the session bass players. I gotta say that the bass line, as far as I'm concerned, whether I thought of it or not, that's his bass line, because he just made that thing come right to life. It was fantastic. And what summer rock tribute would be complete without something from the Beach Boys? How about the Warmth of the Sun? Not only is this the title of one of their hits, this is also the title of their 2007 compilation album, which featured their many songs of summer, including All Summer Long, Surf's Up, and the title song. It is performed here, in the background, by Brian Wilson's daughters, Carney and Wendy, on an album entitled A Song for My Father, appropriate given that Father's Day is this Sunday. This next announcement comes to us from www.ncsymphony.org. Summer is here, and the North Carolina Symphony has many concerts all season long and all across the state. From our Rex Healthcare Summerfest series in Cary, where kids 12 and under get in free and you can bring your own picnic, to classical concerts across the state, to a symphonic rock tribute to the music of Queen, there's something for everyone. For example, there's Around the World in 80 Minutes, and this is on June the 5th, Riverwalk Crossing Park, Jacksonville. That's a free concert. The Pines of Rome on June the 11th, Saturday at Cocoa Booth Amphitheater in Cary at 7:30 p.m. Live and Let Die, the music of Paul McCartney. Sunday, May the 18th. At Cocoa Booth Amphitheater in Cary, 7:30 p.m. Swan Lake at Symphony Lake. That's Saturday, June 25th at Cocoa Booth Amphitheater in Cary at 7:30. Stars and Stripes, July the 2nd, Saturday. Keenan Auditorium, UNCW, Wilmington, 7:30 p.m. Independence Day with Fireworks, July the 1st, July the 3rd, and July the 4th. At Festival Park in Fayetteville, Lake Benson Park in Garner, and Cocoa Booth Amphitheater in Cary, respectively. And Pirates on July the 9th, Cocoa Booth Amphitheater, Cary. The Music of Queen, a rock symphony, that's July 14th, Mimendi Concert Hall in Raleigh. And Time for Three, Saturday, July 16th, Cocoa Booth Amphitheater, Cary. And from the Entertainment Weekly Summer 2011 Music preview issue, we see on the road the tours, and this includes like Britney Spears and Nicki Minaj. That comes out from June the 16th to August the 8th this summer. Bruno Mars and Janelle Monáe. Glee live in concert, also that comes out through June 18th. James Taylor, the folk rock icon, goes on a half-season run without a trip in Carolina in sight. That runs through July the 4th. Then we have Taylor Swift. Country's Golden Girl will take half the year to support her smash Speak Now Southern Rockers. Need to Breathe have snagged the coveted opening slot May 27th through November the 22nd.
So this is me swallowing my pride, standing in front of you, saying I'm sorry for that night. And I go back to December all the time. It turns out freedom.
We also have Kenny Chesney. It wouldn't be summer without Kenny, who will take his 22 number ones for a spin before starting work on his next album. He's going to be on tour through the 28th of August. Sugarland, the country duo, will stop at legendary spaces and state fairs alike throughout October 21. Josh Groban through November 14th. NKOTBSB, we relive 3 decades worth of sleepover dreams with New Kids on the Block and Backstreet Boys. Both alone and together, that goes from May 25th to August 7th. And finally, Phish, the veteran jammers stick mostly to the East Coast, including a stop at the Super Bowl Festival in Watkins Glen, New York on July the 4th weekend. May the 27th through September 4th, they are on tour. And we end today's program with some quotes about music from Uncle John's bathroom reader, The Power of Music. Music can name the unnameable and communicate the unknowable. That according to Leonard Bernstein. Good music is good no matter what kind of music it is. That according to Miles Davis. Music at its essence is what gives us memories. That from Stevie Wonder. And finally, music gives a soul to the universe, wings to the mind, flight to the imagination, and life to everything. And that's from Plato. So how'd you do on those trivia questions today? Well, despite all the other musical group hits of 1965, the winner of the Grammy for Best Vocal Group in that year was, drumroll please, the Anita Kerr Quartet. Their award-winning album was titled We Dig Mancini. And answer number 2, John Popper of the group Blues Traveler became the first Grammy Award winner to jump up and tear a leg ligament. Oh, well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. If you have a suggestion for an artist, group, or genre of rock music to feature on this show, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 832-5138. So long until next time.